欢迎来到第52集的公视主题之夜秀 Podcast， 我是小编燕婷。这一集纪录片是《被偷走的国家》，是关于厄瓜多原住民抵抗中国矿业公司对自然环境的破坏。这部纪录片超像战争片，超级精彩，你一定要去看。这一集论坛前半部，我们跟德国纪录片导演 Mark 连线，一起从厄瓜多来看中国的一带一路对世界的影响。是不是中国用钱就能买下所有的国家呢？而为了赚钱，你愿意牺牲什么？言论自由、个人兴趣、民主？前半部论坛主要用英文进行，中文为辅，主持人凯莉会大致翻译。先跟大家抱歉的是，自己没有录影版本的完整翻译稿，只有节目版本的，不过一样放在连结，需要的朋友请自行参考，就只能拜托大家多练习英文咯。拜拜。
看完这部纪录片，让我想到我的国家巴拿马，事实也让我想到所有拉丁美洲加利比地区的国家。中国对拉美的那个 extractivism policy 是2000年的时候开始。extractivism policy 是什么呢？就是很简单了，中国需要什么，他们去拉丁美洲拿什么。我叫 Nemias José Jaén Celada， 中文名字是 Jaén。我在台湾开了一个顾问公司，我已经在台湾念了很多年。台大毕业以后，我搬到中国去上那个中国人民大学硕士，研究两个方面，第一个是中国共产党的，第二个是中国对拉美的外交经济政策。后来我当了北京巴拿马的副代表。
巴拿马共和国政府从即日断绝同台湾方面的所谓外交关系。
后来巴拿马跟台湾断掉，然后跟中国建交。他们想要一个大使馆，那 I build an embassy。 他们想要一个领事馆， I build the consulate。 他们要我让那个副总领事，我当副总领事。I was not part of the team, of the decision-making team. They will never ask me for that because they know my background. I studied in Taiwan with freedom of thinking, freedom of speech, freedom of writing, freedom of basically everything, right? 那就是为什么我巴拿马跟台湾断交，我什么都不知道。为什么？因为如果我知道的话，我会跟他们。巴拿马政府跟我没有说，因为中国政府跟他们说我，他们不能让我知道。They know that I really know China.
So you are on a blacklist.
Not for my government at that time, but for China for sure. 到现在。El reporte Global Times del Congreso, del 20º Congreso Nacional del Partido Comunista Chino. 6年以前，同样的人。他们会说赶快赶快赶快 free trade free trade free trade 要钱，到现在六年以后他们说不行。为什么？现在巴拿马人民或者是那个 private business sector 他们都不相信中国。
Tienes sueño, ¿verdad? Dale, pues como un poquito más y vamos a dormir, ¿ok?
如果是在台湾做生意或者是从台湾到印度亚太地区做生意，我觉得也是非常好的一个地方。为什么？台湾的天气非常好，台湾的生活费也比较低，比很多国家日本、南韩就比较便宜了。因为我有小孩，所以我觉得住我小孩住台湾是一个非常好的一个 experience。
哇！
Most politicians and business people.Panama or from whatever country, they were always willing to sacrifice a lot of things for economic gain. Unfortunately, nowadays, we have realized that by sacrificing so many things, we are also losing our democracy and our freedom and our human rights. So this is the point.
Thank you.
赚钱都来不及了，有谁在乎自由不自由呢？插嘴边，昨天看了小熊维，真的好像习。欢迎今天的语谈人哈恩、廖金章、李易安，还有主持人凯莉。
Welcome to the Think Night Show. This is Kylie. I'm the host for you for today. And we all just watched the film The Stolen Country of Mine that tells a story of what happened in a village in Ecuador and how villagers were trying to fight against the Chinese mining companies from exploiting their homeland. And the theme of today is what are you willing to sacrifice to make money? We'll talk about our own priorities.Over your value choices, and we'll talk about what happened in Latin America, how people have been shifting from probably more towards China, till now maybe they have more concerns over China, and we'll talk about how that relates to the Taiwanese people. Of course, we have participants live here joining us today, and we also have important guests sitting next to me. I'd like to start with James. Would you please introduce for us? 为我们介绍一下你自己。
各位大家好，大家好，我叫廖金章了，我是一个在中国工作25年的所谓台商哈。那今年4月份呢，我算是润回台湾了哈，我用润了哈，我真的是跑回来的哈，因为我知道我再不回来，他们要抓我了哈。那到底为什么这个事情，待会再讲。就说中国这个地方，应该有很多台湾人不知道的地方。所以我希望我回来之后，因为我不打算再去中国了哈，所以我希望能够把这些东西传播给不知道真相的台湾人。好，谢谢各位。
好，谢谢 James 啊，相信大家对他的经历25年一定有很多的好奇。Now I'd like to invite Haen, sorry, to introduce herself for us.
Thank you, Kylie. Good evening. My name is Nemias Haen. I'm from Panama. 我的中文名字就是 Haen. I came to the Indo-Pacific 17 years ago in 2006. I'm a National Taiwan University political science graduate. After I finished college here, I moved to Beijing to do my master's in Chinese politics, where I became a sinologist, an expert in the Chinese Communist Party, and also the Chinese foreign policy towards Latin America, mostly. By the time I was finishing my master's, I started working for the Panamanian government. At the time, in 2014-15, I became the deputy representative of Panama to China. We didn't have diplomatic relations with China. We had with ROC Taiwan, right? So I was deputy representative until 2017, when the Panamanian government decided to shift from Taipei to Beijing, establishing diplomatic relationships. And after that, I was transferred to Shanghai as the Vice Consul General of Panama. At the peak of the pandemic in 2020, November, I basically just decided to move back to Taiwan, where I have now my own consulting company. I specialize in strategic business solution, investment, economics, and maritime affairs as well. Yeah.
Thank you so much. Interesting experience. Thank you, Haen and Ian.
Hi, thank you, Kelly, and hi, everyone. My name is Ian Lee, and I'm a journalist based in Taiwan, mainly covering geopolitical and economic topics. And I was in Solomon Islands back in 2019 when this Pacific country switched diplomatic ties from Taiwan to China. So I was very curious because this country is one of the very few that you see people took to the street.And outspokenly opposed the government's decision for this diplomatic switch. So I took the trip to fly to the Solomon Islands and witnessed how the Chinese influence and the money pouring in are affecting and are causing this diplomatic shift. Yeah, so I look forward to this meaningful discussion today.
Oh my God, so we have an important guest can share with us the firsthand history thatWe all got dumped, right? The Taiwanese government. So let's start with the film first, okay? So we all saw the film. We have seen the Chinese government has been using its economic power through the Belt and Road Initiative to enter you know, different countries like Ecuador and also many other countries. And they provide you also always the loan, right? This is a really similar formula. They give you the loan and the country can pay back with maybe their oil, their mining rights. And sometimes people will start to talk about this is probably a debt trap set up by the Chinese government, or the local people never get any benefit. And of course, we can talk a lot about that, but I would love to know, so what's going on? So what happened? Maybe we can start with Haiyan. So what's happening in Panama?
At the time, the decision was, I consider the decision like a wrong one at that time, because we have a lot of interest in the Asia-Pacific region. Mostly with Japan, South Korea, and so on. But we know what was going at that time in the Indo-Pacific. China had a territorial dispute, had and still having the territorial dispute with Japan, which is our main ally in the region, also with southeastern Tonangya countries, like Southeast Asian countries, like Philippines, Vietnam, and so on. But I guess the decision was very personal, was not really based on the country's interests. The global ones, the regional one, the intra-regional one. So the decision was made based on a personal perspective, but a few years passed and there is basically nothing happening between Panama and China. I mean, a lot of things, they have been happening for the last 30, 40 years, but for the reasons they said it was necessary to establish diplomatic relations, basically nowadays we haven't seen any specific gain based on that decision.
Oh, wow. So you didn't know anything about that decision, so you didn't get a piece of the pie.
I got nothing. I got a very shocking news early morning that day, Beijing time, having my coffee before going to the office. So.
Interesting. Okay, so of course we have seen the film and we also have an important guest joining us today. The director Mark is online joining us. Mark, would you please introduce yourself to our audience?
Morning to everyone. Of course, here in Germany, it's morning. Nice to be welcomed in Taiwan. And my name is Mark Wieser. I'm the director of this stolen country of mine. And we were working around 4 years on this topic in Ecuador.
Nice. We are looking forward to talking more about the film and the story behind it and your experience. Thank you so much. So I think I would love to know more about the situation in Ecuador, because you talked about how people in Ecuador no longer trust the Chinese government. So what happened? And if that's the case, why would the government still cut Taiwan off and build diplomatic relationship with China?
Well, the situation, as you said in the introduction, is that they are very close allies now of China. And the situation of the loans is that they are like handcuffed today. Like in the movie Fernando Villavicencio, this investigative journalist who is nowadays a politician in the parliament, and he said it very clear that they were colonized again. And in a way, China has overtaken the whole country. So, and of course, I mean, to receive loans is no bad thing. That's not the point. The point are the conditions. You know, as it was described, the conditions that the resources, if they try to pay back, are underpriced, so that they are never able to pay the loans. And Fernando and me, we are owning something like the Panama Papers of Ecuador. So we are owning around 19,000 confidential contracts, everything between Ecuador and China. China Oil, Petro Ecuador, China Development Bank, Exim Bank, everything. We have everything documented on paper. And you find things like the right of collection, it is named. Very strange. So the meaning is, the moment Petro Ecuador is not able to pay back the loans with oil, and they have the right to confiscate the money of the government of Ecuador. And that's why it is now like a colony. And if you are checking the business today in Ecuador, we take the most important 10 part of business, let's say like IT business, hospitals, equipment for hospitals, equipment for military, police, and. 9 of these 10 businesses are in Chinese hands. And we have a situation in Latin America in the 80s and 90s There were countries like Brazil, Argentina, Chile, and they had loans with the West, Western countries, and the World Bank, mainly U.S. and World Bank. And it came the day the country said, we are not able to pay back, or it means that people are dying because we are poor. We are not able to pay back all these rates. And the Western countries and World Bank had to make a cut. And I was talking to a specialist in Beijing. Are you not afraid that this might happen with countries like Ecuador too? It's very important. Ecuador is just an example. You know, they are doing it worldwide. And he said, no, we are not afraid. We have no problem with that. I said, why? He said, because we have built the whole infrastructure. And that's what I meant with this 9 of 10 parts of business in Chinese hands. He said, when we are leaving Ecuador, everything is collapsing.
But it seems like in your film that everyone in the village or a lot of people are standing together with strong solidarity. They all know they need to be more concerned over China. But is that the case when you shot this video or when you shot the film? Did you see anyone who actually are poor China?
Yeah, of course, of course. I mean, it was divided. And even up in the mountains there, in this national park, Cajas, we had 2 or 3 villages. And there was a village. They were even fighting against the resistance movement because they were simply paid for that. The mining company came and they gave a lot of money. And these these people of this village, they were working in the mine. So they were interested in that. And they were not realizing what is going on. Because, for example, the mine was declared as a gold and copper mine. But there was one strange point. I mean, the Chinese company took all these millions of tons of stones on trucks to Guayaquil. And there they transferred it on ships and brought it to China, you know? And of course, it's possible to take the gold and copper out in Ecuador too. So the resistance movement asked themselves, hey, why they are doing it? And they kidnapped one truck. So they took weapons, kidnapped the truck, and brought the stones to a specialist. And the specialist analyzed the stones and said, this is never a gold mine because there are so few parts of gold in the stones. It's impossible. And so they asked him, what is in? And he said, uranium. But you have to know, it is strictly forbidden in the constitution of Ecuador to explore uranium in Ecuador. And we have filmed in this mine, and I can tell you a long time ago, I filmed in a coal mine in Germany. So I know how you have to secure things and ways and stuff like that. And we were in, and I said, hey, come on, let's focus, let's be quick, and let's go out. Because the mine looks like a mine in Germany in around 1920, something like that. So I'm absolutely sure that they never took any ways to secure that the uranium is not going into the water and stuff like that.
Yeah, so any questions that you would love to ask the director? So maybe you'll need a little more time. Thank you so much for all the information. And I'd love to ask Haiyan, and we can continue to talk about so what happening in Panama. And so I would like to ask again, sorry, that why would they still cut off Taiwan and continue the? Why would they still cut off Taiwan and continue to do a partner with China? Because I've seen on the news that Ecuador, the government is still sorry. The government of Panama is still negotiating with China, and China is still an important partner. So it's really hard to like cut it off completely because a lot of countries just need the resources from China to build their infrastructure and to help there with the finance.
There is a fundamental difference between Panama and Ecuador. Mark, he should know that very well. We, financially speaking, first, we have a dollarized economy for more than 100 years since the beginning of the Republic. So that makes things very different from countries like Ecuador that dollarized their economy a few years ago. So based on that, it's important to say that when it comes to loans, when it comes to financial support or other type of financial teams to actually to invest in public infrastructure for development and all these. We don't really need Chinese money. So this is a very basic and factor here that we have to consider when it comes to the case of Panama. The last government of Panama, which is in power now until 2024, during the pandemic and until now, the central government, they have issued bonds for billions of dollars. They don't go to China to issue bonds or to sell debt. They go to New York, they go to London. And in the last bond issues that we had a few days ago, Panama put out in the market, I think was like $1.5 billion, and we had offer four times more than that. So it means that we are financially strong. So using China as an excuse that we need that investment or we need that loan structure and all these things are not a good one, I will say, are not valid. That's what I will say. When it comes to infrastructure, for example, there was this project from Panama City to the border with Costa Rica. The past government, they wanted to build a train, but we don't even have enough people living on that side. From Panama City to the countryside, we don't have that amount of people. And let's not even talk about people's transportation. Let's talk about goods. We don't really have production in that area. Agricultural production, yes. But the distance from Panama City to there is like 550, 600 kilometers. Do we really need to spend $5 billion to build a train? Do we really need China to do that? If we wanted to do that project and we need money, we just go to the international market and we're going to get it. And one of the things that I criticize the most until now is that the feasibility assessment of the project was done by a Chinese company, a state company. Of course, if they are trying to sell us and try to hook up with a loan, they are not going to tell us, like, you know what, this project is really not feasible. You don't really need it. Of course not. They said that the project was socially necessary. What does it mean for a project that's going to cost billions of dollars? It's going to cost more than the expansion of the Panama Canal. So I think we need to be more serious and more focused when it comes to that analysis, you know?
But I think I agree with everything you said. It sounds like making sense a lot, but sometimes it sounds like a government point of view. Like the government has to be responsible to make the right decision for the people, for its country. But for common people, do they agree with everything you say, or they would just think, oh, easy money from China, they're helping us invest, so we should open our arms to China?
Okay,
what's the situation?
At the end, honestly speaking, if you talk to common people, and this is the reason why I have read the program, that's why I write for newspapers in Panama, because I'm basically sharing, teaching, and all these things. So to increase the awareness of our people in Panama to know why these things are not necessary or why other things are necessary. But when it comes to this one, if you ask anyone in Panama, of course, you know, it's nice to have a train, you know. who will say, no, don't build it? But they don't know the long-term repercussions or consequences that those kind of deals with China, in this case, might bring, you know. So if you ask the common people, they have common thinking when it comes to these things, you know.
Thank you. Ian, you have experience in the Solomon Islands. Is the situation similar or different?
I think it's slightly different. But if you look at the trade statistics, you feel like, wow, it's almost like a miracle for Chinese government to grab this ally from Taiwan, of Taiwan, until not 2019, because like 90% of the total exports are timber export to China. So Chinese market has been always a very significant market for them. So yeah, so it feels like, wow, so Taiwan could keep this island for such a long time. And it was only until not 2019 that this diplomatic shift happened. Yeah, but I would like to also emphasize the the key men, like the middlemen between the Chinese government and the Solomon Islands governments. And there's a certain group from Malaysia who are actually Chinese descendants, so they could speak Mandarin. They can speak Mandarin Chinese very, very well. So they are starting to act as a middleman between, you know, the Chinese market and the buyers in China, and then with the logging companies based, local logging companies in Solomon Islands and, their employees in Solomon Islands. And they have been acting as a middleman when the Chinese government finally they decided to take over this airline from Taiwan back in 2019. Yeah, so yeah, what I want to emphasize is that the overseas Chinese communities are also very important factors and actors in this, you know, international geopolitical stage. Yes.
So we talk about how we need to increase awareness of people need to know the long-term repercussions for all these, the investment from the Chinese government. So James has been in China for 25 years. I'm sure he was a really successful businessman in China. What would be your viewpoint over that? 你对中国政府这样一带一路然后做投资的看法是什么? 你觉得人民要怎么样可以有更多警觉或是应不应该警觉?
其实一带一路齁，很多还可能还不是我们表面上看的这个样子啦。为什么你知道？这一次那个王毅不是突然宣布吗？对很多一带一路国家的那个贷款是免掉嘛？为什么会这样子？中国的崛起从来都不具善意，它对世界是不具善意的，它是具有侵略性的，所以它是用很大的资金去诱惑这些，比如说斯里兰卡这一带一路的国家嘛。它最大的问题是什么？ 比如说我表面上我贷给你100亿啦，事实上你国家根本拿不到100亿啦，有可能有部分的钱是习近平的家族又拿走了，有可能部分的钱是当地的总统私人拿走了，但是你国家还是得还这100亿啊。那这100亿它本身经济出了问题，我就跟你耍赖嘛，因为我知道你也不敢把事情闹开，因为我才拿50亿啊，但你账面上是100亿嘛。 很简单的道理啊，所以中国政府一笔勾销，世界上有哪一个国家对其他国家的贷款是一笔勾销的？所以很多事情它有它内部的深层的问题，任何一件事情只要经过共产党的手中做出来的事情，它绝对就会招惊，也台湾话叫招惊，也就是跟原本的那个精神是不一样的。因为那是一个中国是一个整个叫做系统性崩塌的国家。什么叫系统性崩塌？ 任何一个系统它都崩塌了，所以本来是一件好事，它最后产生的效果都会变成一塌糊涂。包括我们这次很简单嘛，这个清零其实也没有到那么，但是为什么激起了这么大的那个反弹？它当中执行它的执行都有问题，它任何执行都有问题嘛。包括疫苗那个张三三大家都知道嘛，哈，他把那个什么检测公司开到哪里，哪里就疫情爆发嘛。 当然我不知道这样讲对不对了，我是得到消息啊，张三三是习近平弟媳妇的妹妹啦，但我这个是我听到我大陆朋友跟我爆料的，我不敢确定。我也就是说，这些东西任何一件事在他们的执行过程中都会产生所谓的贪腐的情况，所以本来就是一个邪恶的政党的哈，但是在执行下来会更邪恶，所以今天中国人民为什么会民不聊生，就是这个问题。所以不管一带一路。 还是什么都是个样子的，一带一路基本是垮掉了嘛，应该大家都知道嘛。哦，非洲那些国家也基本上都还不出来了嘛。哎，你明明就是你不是因为工业革命之后，所有的产品都是产业过剩嘛，大家都在找市场。一带一路本来如果它的精神上，我认为没有太大的错误，但是执行过程它是荒腔走板。共产党它今天的最大问题就是没有执政能力。 下面的人在揣摩上意了，每个人就只负责揣摩上意的，他没有负责要把事情做好哦。而我们民主国家人是说，我把事情做好，这是我的责任嘛。但是共产国家只是负责讨好他的上司，所以这个国家必定崩塌了。所以为什么我25年的心血我放掉我回来的，因为我发现它真的会崩塌，它已经没有任何可以让中国 经济再恢复的可能性，因为供应链崩塌，采购链也崩塌了。好，我们继续讲到这里。好，
I would like to briefly translate for Mark and a lot of our foreigners friends staying here. So according to James, he stayed in China for 25 years, and then according to him, he thinks that the rise of China is not with a good heart. They always promise you a certain amount of money, but they never really fully kept their promise. A lot of corruption, a lot of internal connections. So CCP is basically an evil party. And a lot of time, the Belt and Road Initiative was created with a good heart, but they didn't have the capability to fully enforce it. They just were not able to do it right. So CCP doomed to fail. That's why James decided to come back and give up all the achievement that he did for 25 years in China. So, okay, so I would love to ask Ian maybe to follow on that, because a lot of time we feel like we are always blaming China for everything. We feel like they are setting up this trap. They are trying to make all the countries corrupt or bankrupt. It's all because of China. But, well, I mean, I'm sure there are a lot of predecessors doing a lot similar things, like mining companies, probably from the UK to Latin America to many different countries as well. So what has China done differently from any other predecessors or based on your observation?
Okay. I think we still need some more empirical research before we can reach conclusions on all of these topics. These are very complicated questions.
Sounds like a journalist.
Yeah, but to my experiences in Solomon Islands, it was very interesting because people would tell me that, well, the corruption was already there before Chinese people came in. There's always been corruptions in Solomon Islands. Like, take Taiwan, for example. Like, we used to, you know, put a lot of money and aid like into Solomon Islands. But this whole system was not very good. Like most of the money would go into a fund called Constituency Development Fund. And you know, all the parliament members from each constituency can freely use the money. Yeah, so that caused a lot of room for corruption for sure. Yeah, so I'm not sure I'm not sure about the updates and how Chinese government are handling all these donations or development funding or investments in Solomon Islands. But yeah, but I want to emphasize that while the corruption was already there before Chinese people came in. But on the other hand, you also started to see a lot of research claiming that Chinese money or Chinese investments are more convenient for a lot of politicians. Because it's not like Western money. It's like they don't ask you to abide to certain, you know, human rights issues and, you know, those kind of things corresponding to Western values. Yeah, so it's more or less like a convenient money for them that you don't really have to, you know, do a lot of things that is not really directly related to the investment itself. Yeah, so that's my observation. Yeah.
Thank you. And Mark, would you like to answer that question as well? Do you think we are blaming too much on China for everything, for meddling with other nations' domestic issues?
Well, of course, they have done these investments and loans too. But, I mean, the difference is the plan behind, the strategy plan. It's very good designed. And I'll give you an example. I mean, there were two key words for me in the discussion. The one, of course, is corruption. It's always like that. And the other one is middleman. And for example, in Ecuador, they have built up a middleman who became, with the first $1 billion loan, he became the chief of Petro Ecuador. And then he allowed more and more and more projects on oil exploration. And some years later, they needed more money and they said, well, we have a little wish. And this man has to become the mining minister. And he gave packages, hundreds of projects, and green light, you know, they could start. So that makes it very, very complicated. But China is mainly using or going into countries which are vulnerable on an economy level at the moment. For example, Greece, after the 2008 bank crash, Lehman crash, and the world economic crisis, they stepped in very much. In Latin America, there's a role on the Western side, of course, because we had in the last 20 years, until the last years when Duque and Bolsonaro were coming up. But before that, we had a lot of left-wing governments coming up. And the reaction of the West was they refused to give them more money. And that was a chance for China to step in. And in a way, you know, it's superpowers playing chess with countries. That's a situation. And now you have the situation, if you look to Venezuela, I'm right now in the editing room with my new movie about Venezuela, and Guaido was coming up, and he was backed up by the Western countries, but in a way he had no chance, because China and Russia are in the country, and they are not going out. They are not going out for free. So corruption, yes, there is a benefit of the people. And there was one really shocking experience in Ecuador, because I was talking to cab drivers, people, baristas in the coffee shops, and regular people, and they had no slight idea of this contract. They had no slight idea of the whole situation, because Rafael Correa, as a president, was closing critical newspapers. He was hunting critical journalists. You know, that came together. And that makes it for the regular people very difficult to be aware. But, I mean, yeah, it's a strong signal for the countries. 3-4 years ago, there was a so-called Africa conference in Beijing. And there was only one little country of Africa where the prime minister or president refused. All others went to Beijing. And the only sense of the whole conference were new loans, which made them more combined and more dependent on China. Yeah. I mean, the new Silk Road is only, I mean, so much discussed all around the world, but it's only a little part of the big plan China is doing. And I mean, the people in the studio know it better because he has worked 25 years in China. And China nowadays is not the same country like 20 years ago. Even in China itself, a lot of things has changed, a lot of them. I mean, they have this surveillance system and which is really, really shocking. I mean, George Orwell's 1984 is nothing against that.
Yeah, Taiwanese people have been sitting at the first row to witness the change of the Chinese government. Thank you for the sharing. And I would love to ask James, because when Ian was talking about how it is convenient for to get Chinese money because no strings attached, and James has been in China to do business for 25 years. So how does that feel? How does that feel to make like easy money in China? So James, 你在中国赚了25年的钱嘛，那刚刚依然有讲到说这个中国钱很好赚嘛，因为他也不会给你一堆条件，也不跟你啰嗦，反正就放在眼前，不拿白不拿。你的看法是什么？
他讲这个跟我状况不一样嘛，他讲是个人家是收买另外一个国家，当然钱很好喝，然后因为它是政治的东西，中国是个政治挂帅的国家哈，政治挂帅，政治的东西它是没有什么审计的啊什么的都没有的，我们是做生意的啊，这跟我不是一个概念。中国钱好不好赚？中国钱好赚时间已经早就过去了啦。我只能跟你讲，各位哈，中国的经济已经垮掉了。
是的，
它不是会不会垮了，是已经垮了。我到今天还可以看到我一个朋友公司的财务报表，一塌糊涂。所以中国现在的情况是非常差的。你说未来它还能够再拿这个钱去到处收买吗？这个都是个大问号了，都是个大问号。中国为什么？邓小平要改革开放，就是当时财政困乏嘛，结果改革开放，吃不得三天饱饭呢。现在习近平又想把整个中国带回文革那个时代，人民是见过世面，所以这次白纸革命，你看都是城市嘛，哈，城市人都是见过世面，至少他知道国外的状态嘛，他可能接受过国外教育啦，接受国外的技术啦，就国外资金或者跟国外做生意嘛。他是看过世面的，所以这一次的整个状态会从城市开始，就是这个原因了哈。啊，所以说共产党未来真的没有办法再张牙舞爪了，真的已经没有办法了。所以只能说钱好不好赚，中国没钱了，中国现在真的没钱。中国人现在可怜到什么程度，你们可能不知道，你们认识都是高阶的哈。我25年，我的很多工人，很多做生意的朋友，现在跟他惨不忍睹。3年的风控了，我问你啦，有钱人还可以去买东西来吃啊，对不对？虽然物价高了好几倍，对不对？打工人怎么办？我说习近平连集权的能力都没有。我说为什么集权能力都没有？你要集权，你要奴隶人民，你要让人民吃得饱啊？什么叫奴隶主？奴隶主还要让奴隶吃得饱啊？习近平这个家伙一点能力都没有，带了一群小矮人、地痞流氓。你看现在，他就是连要奴隶你，他都没有办法让你吃饱。也就是说，他这个细节，他们这样的人，他是没有办法去做这些细节的规划的。 所以我为什么对他对中国这么的失望，甚至叫绝望呢？他不是现在不行了吗？白纸革命起来，他说明年要发展经济嘛，哪有那种事？产业链说我今天把你打断啊，明天我要恢复啊，就恢复哦，是不是？当年是因为他进入 WTO， 他才能够发展起来的。我九几年就去了，他没有进 WTO 之前，中国经济是一塌糊涂的。我跟你讲，是进入 WTO 之后，中国东西可以卖到全世界啊。哦，我只要价格低，我哪里都可以卖去，所以他什么东西都可以往外卖。所以他才有了这三十年的繁荣哦，这三十年繁荣是用很大很大所谓的劳力密集啊，压榨劳工啊，然后整个资源，然后整个环保，他是付出极大的代价，他达到今天的阶段。但是这个傻子呢，哈，我常常叫习近平叫习大傻了。中国三十年改革开放的红利，他一招把它用掉，而且他现在想要再把它拿回来，没有那个机会啦。美国都要去红色供应链了，他怎么再回到这个世界舞台？中国未来会很惨，会很惨。
So, it's no as a businessman perspective, China is no longer the easy way to make money over there, and then they are having a really hard time. And of course, so that's part of the reason why the people have been more educated, especially the people in the cities, and that's why the white paper protests and revolution started in the cities. But a lot of like general normal people are suffering a lot, and China has been lost its opportunities to just like how it was prospered for the past 30 years since it entered WTO. And then we actually talk about a little bit of infiltration, like how people started to either pro-China or they started to shift more towards anti-China. So what's the situation like in your experience? Like, what was the infiltration like? Is there propaganda work you can see on a daily basis? Maybe Han, you can start first.
Thank you, Kylie. On my experience, I will say that I try very hard to keep being objective on this, not to be labeled as pro-China or anti-China in this case, right? Anti-China. What is my goal based on my expertise and my 17 years experience in the Indo-Pacific between PRC and ROC Taiwan is actually to bring people knowledge. This is my main goal. Of course, I'm being labeled as a anti-China by the Chinese government, because there is a big issue that Yan, for sure, he might back me up with that, is that there is an strict control and manipulation of the information about China. What James was just saying, that all these details about the Chinese economy, this is exactly what I have been bringing to Panama and Latin America in my podcast and my weekly radio program. When I talk about China, I just say what is happening there with facts, with information. And I'm telling them back home and in Latin America, Chinese economy is not doing well. In the Chinese economy, we are experiencing this, and that. The 10 biggest developers of China, they are bankrupt. This is a big issue. This thing could drag the entire global economy to the ground. So these are the type of things that I'm doing. So it's not about, you know, but when it comes, for example, for not very common people, if we put it like this, but to the elites, at least in my country, 6 years ago, they were crazy about signing a free trade agreement. Mm-hmm. 6 years passed. I just came back from Panama. I went to Panama, Cuba, Paraguay, and Argentina. When I was in Panama, I met business sector. I even gave an update about the Indo-Pacific, exactly about China and Taiwan economy and all these things. And I was just telling them the real status of the situation here, the state of affairs in this area. And that same people that they were pro-signing an FTA, a free trade agreement, right now they are the ones who are opposing it. Mm-hmm. Because now they start to understand what are the perils of getting into this type of deals.
So does that mean that there's a chance that the Panama government might, you know, like set up diplomatic relationship with Taiwan again, or?
I can tell you that's never gonna happen.
Oh, okay.
That I can be almost sure that is not happen, because the thing was not to do it. But now that the decision was made and so many other things that are not only related to China, but to the main, you know, interests of the country right now, that might not happen. But something that has to happen as soon as possible is the establishment of the Panama representative office in Taipei. That has to happen. There are many business interests here. There are many educational technology transfer and so many things that Taiwan traditionally has been working with Panama for the last 50 years that we need to get back on track and actually continue doing that and also partner for democracy, human rights and freedom.
So still continue the relationship, but no title attached.
Yeah.
Any questions from our participants? 今天我们公民朋友很多，有没有什么问题或是想法想要提出来？哎，就麻烦麦克风。
Hi. So actually, I have a question for Mark. As we can see in the documentary, the protester in the village or in Ecuador actually they care a lot about their water resources and also their linkage with their land and their homeland.And actually, I want to ask that, with your observation, do the local people actually pay more attention about their environmental issues instead of freedom and democracy? So can you share more about this issue?
你可以用中文再讲一次吗？谢谢。
就是在片子里面，我们可以看到厄瓜多的那个示威者，其实他们很在乎他们在地的连接跟水源的问题，但是。就是我们很少会看到他们要求的东西是可能是关于自由或是民主制度的事情。那我想问的导演是在他在那个在地的观察里面到底他们在就在地人在乎的事情的那个优先顺序到底是什么
Would you like to answer that question?
BP heard.
Yeah, of course. They have to, the indigenous people in Ecuador have a totally different understanding of nature and resources.And I like to use the metaphorical expression, we have two parents, mother and father. And for them, the indigenous people, the nature is like a third parent. This is totally different from the attitude we have in Europe. So that's why I don't think you can, in a way, divide it. For them, it's the same, the fighting for the nature and fighting for their freedom.And let me tell you, I mean, it was very inspiring and convincing because they really live it. When they say, we are ready to pay the price, I witnessed a couple and they had two little girls, 6 and 8 years old. And the couple was discussing who will participate the resistance. And the sense behind was because the person might be killed and the other one has to take care of the children.And it was interesting because in that case, the woman was fighting and the man was staying home with the children. So for them, it's very substantial. It's very substantial. And of course, when I started there, I saw these few people. And honestly, I thought what they want to do against a superpower, using their own government, using the police of Ecuador, the military of Ecuador.But, you know, sometimes big things like this Friday for Future movement started with one little girl in Sweden, 15 years old. And so sometimes big things are starting very little. And Mahatma Gandhi was starting very little. So that was very inspiring. And I would like to add something to this question of infiltration, what you have discussed before. Yes, it's happening. And it's not only happening in countries like Ecuador, Venezuela, and others. Australia had some years ago a big scandal, and two or three ministers had to resign in this scandal because they were paid with Chinese money. Canada right now has this scandal. The European Parliament, it came out that some members of the parliament were paid by Chinese money. And I'm not anti-China, no. I mean, I'm born in 66. I made films aboutwhat the CIA has done in Latin America or on the Balkan. That's not the point. But the point is what they are doing and how they are acting. And that's simple wrong, you know? It's like today. I mean, Putin cannot say, well, it's okay that I'm making this war in the Ukraine because America went into Vietnam. No, it's not okay. Both is absolutely wrong. And that's the same here. I mean, if they would do fair business, they are welcomed.They're really welcome to help the world, but they're not doing like that.
Thank you so much for the sharing. 有没有其他问题? Any other questions? 我们先这边。
哦，我想请问一下，
可能要大声一点，谢谢。哦、
我想请问一下廖先生、哦、像现在台商在大陆所遇到的一个状况，那就目前其实在大陆还是有很多知名的台湾企业在那边，那对于目前台湾政府的一些经济政策，不管是希望他回来或者是希望他可以朝这个东南亚做发展，不知道说就廖先生您的观察，这些企业他是不是会有这样子的一个转移的一个动向？
所以你首先讲的是知名企业嘛，
对，
是的，在中国你要做企业的话，就是这些比较大的大型企业它比较有成功机会了，小型的企业基本上在这些年的那种一大很多问题的情况下，大部分小型企业大概是倒光了，就不要以为台湾人在中国赚很多钱，其实亏本的居多。那中国现在遇到这种状态，我说是中等收入陷阱嘛，休斯底的陷阱，这是同时到来的，它是没有能力解决的。哦、我们讲日本，当年日本的中等收入陷阱，休斯底的陷阱，日本是很有钱的、啊。他虽然遇到这种状况，美国虽然打压他嘛，但是他很有钱。中国现在是所有的财政都垮掉了，中国政府财政至少超过100兆的人民币，最少这个我看最初步的估计。加上当年日本是很，他有跟世界是很关系很好嘛，中国现在是全世界围剿他嘛。加上他跟欧洲的贸易那个还没有签哦，中欧的贸易协定还没有签哦，他跟美国的贸易战绝对会持续打下去，甚至会越来越厉害嘛。你看的时候拜登最近的那个态度哈，你就知道这个是没有，这是没有办法善了啦。中美之间绝对是你死我活了啦，已经没有可能善了。当然我讲的是经济上了啊，这外交上并不是真的真刀真枪这样。所以我认为台商再不走，他真的会跑不掉。很多人搞不清楚富士康这些事情为什么呢？其实我的看法，我自己的看法哈，中央想要共同富裕，所以中央搞你习近平，搞你那个富士康，因为河南是五毛跟粉红的重灾区，河南人是不太可能出来抗争这个的。以我认识的河南人，他们对政府是歌功颂德的份而已了。那为什么今天会这样？我的看法，中央是要共同富裕，要把你富士康赶走，但是地方政府坚决不能，因为富士康一走，郑州的70%的 GDP 就完了。你70%的 GDP 完的时候，你地方政府，你书记跟市长是有事的、啊，共产党不会说，哎呀，是因为我让你共同富裕的，所以哈、哦，这个你的 GDP 降下来啊、哦，你没事，还是一样照砍头就砍头。该摘乌纱帽就摘乌纱帽，所以产生今天的那现在，习近平因为有白纸革命嘛，白纸革命习近平怕到了，他知道说全中国基本上风起云涌啊。我们以前不知道中国真的有这么多觉醒的人，因为我在中国从事这种所谓的反政府运动啦、真相传播啦，我在微信群我干了6年嘛，所以我被喝了4次茶，我被封了300个号啦，所以说这个是我很清楚，但我们以前不知道哎、欸。我们以为以前只有少数人是清醒的，但这一次的白纸运动真的让我们非常惊讶，居然有这么多年小青年这样。所以我一直呼吁中国的朋友，我在所有管道我都呼吁他，我说我们中老年人哦，你活够了，该出来燃烧一次了，因为你不流血，流血就是你的小孩。这个事情在中国还我是认为啦，在我的朋友圈子里面还是有一点有一点影响的，也就是你认为台商在中国，我不知道为什么他们还没走了，应该是还没走，不是不走，因为走真的没有那么容易啊。就像说我这个小商人哈，我要走，我好久就想走了、欸，我是到去年开始停电嘛，他一个礼拜给你停3天4天哦，他不管你的，我就决定要走了。到今年3月份上海封控，我就觉得这个再不走。就没有机会，他连上海都能封了，他就不在乎了。一个从来没有一个国家的领袖是不在乎这个国家经济的，这个叫叹为观止。我跟你讲，所以我认为这个国家没救了，所以我工厂丢下了，我不要，我就回来了。我是跑出来的，我是真的论出来的，因为我喝了4次茶嘛，然后那个所谓国宝已经跟我变成朋友了，你知道？他已经跟我打招呼了，我说你可能要走了，他们现在。 他们找我都是中央发下来的，不跟地方政府都不知道，地方政府不知道这些事，所以任何找我们这种我还不到政治犯的程度啦，就是说像我们这样的都是中央直接指示下来的。
So James decided to run from China because the economy is really not doing well and the Chinese government really don't give. Oh, I can't curse. The Chinese government really don't care about these businesses. And of course, a lot of business, they need to go, but sometimes it's hard for them to leave. And for bigger Taiwanese corporations, it's easier for them still to survive there. But for smaller companies, it's really, really hard. And the China-US have started a trade war. There's really no turning back. So, and of course, the white paper protests still play an important role as well. 好，谢谢。我刚刚是有看到可能最后一个这个阶段最后一个问题，我们等一下会给更多时间。
Open-ended question that I have. So under the status quo, 42% of our exports relies on China, while the U.S. accounts for only 15%. So from your guys' perspective, do you think that this implies we're overly dependent on China? And by extension, what do you think are the differences between Panama, Ecuador, and Taiwan's economic dependency on China in this case? Thank you.
你可以用中文再讲一次。
好，就是说目前台湾对对岸的出口贸易总额占了42%。那对于美国就15%。那请问一下，就是你们认为台湾对于对岸会不会过于的依赖？而这样子的话，台湾跟巴拿马跟 Ecuador 的差别，对于大陆对于对岸的差别又是什么呢？谢谢。
You wanna answer first?
Yeah, sure. This has been one of my basic arguments in the last few years, and I will answer straight, and that's my advice for Taiwan. I just heard this morning, by the way, I saw Minister Wu, Joseph Wu, that he was saying that we need to drink more beer. Well, he didn't say we need to drink more beer, but he was supporting the fact that we should buy more Taiwan beer because they are getting banned in mainland China, in the PRC. But the thing is, it's very easy. It's market diversification. This is the thing that I tell to any country, any like big agro export country. In this case, Panama, we are very small in that sense. But more for more reason for myself, by saying that we don't really need to focus on China. Now, Taiwan, you have very specific export offer. How many countries are there out in the world? That's a question that I ask you. But I ask this question just. To raise your awareness that outside of PRC there is another world, and this is exactly what Taiwanese business people have to do. That is more convenient to do business with China because of the cultural relation and the language. Sure, but since when language should still be an issue for Taiwan to talk to the world? So you are responsible, you are very young. So this is your responsibility as a Taiwanese citizen, as a political leader, as a business leader, is to work harder for that market diversification and stop relying or depending on China. That sounds easy, but actually on doing that, it could be very easy too.
Thank you.
我可以回答吗？
哦，请。
都说我们出口42%到中国了，这个很大的数额哦，2000多亿哦，2500多亿美金哦，美金哦。你到中国的超市，到中国的市场，到中国的市面上，有没有看到台湾商品？你绝对看不到了。
没有，
根本就没有进口嘛，是吧？有的就是康师傅啦，统一那个是在中国生产，那不算哈、哦，那不算。那为什么我们还卖那么多东西过去呢？全部都是芯片嘛，原料零件嘛。台商只占中国企业的3%的规模啦，但是帮他创造了45%的外汇啦，表示什么？我们卖过去的东西都是让他组装成 notebook 啦，那个什么什么手机啦，那什么东西的哈，帮他创造外汇的。所以以习近平这么狠的人，他敢去动澳大利亚，他为什么就不敢动台湾？因为他很善良嘛，因为他买不到这么又好又便宜的东西。
是的。
Yeah. 所以不用用这个统计哈、哦、来混淆这些东西啊，没有谁靠谁，这叫做上下游整合。况且我认为这个东西台商离开哈、哦，电子五哥鸿海离开中国，对台湾是大大的好消息。你不管到印度、到越南、到东南亚，你原料还是得从台湾买啊，是吧？我的出口不会减少嘞。 不会减少。你有哪一个国家可以取代台湾的科技业？你告诉我，没有嘛，没有嘛。那你如果这些工厂都离开了中国，我们对中国就再也没有你们所谓的依赖啦。这有什么不好呢？我觉得这是很好，这一次就是个契机啦。我相信他们都想走了，因为我真的跟你讲，中国经商环境太恶劣了，太恶劣了，好不好？你一个采购商呢，今天跟你下订单，我什么时候下订单？我什么时候出货？我什么时候到货？我什么时候上架？我什么时候做促销？是有一套计划的。你突然一个停电给我搞，我出不了货了。你一个封城把我出不了货了，采购商损失比你还大。这个教训，你觉得采购商还会留在中国吗？他有那么笨吗？我有地方可以买、欸。十几年前啊，鞋子的采购商，比如说 Adidas， 比如说 Puma， 比如说 Nike， 就已经跟这些所谓采购，因为我以前在中国是开鞋厂的，他告诉我们十年内不离开中国，他是不会给你订单的。这个事情在奥巴马时代就已经发生了。所以为什么台湾的在中国鞋厂突然间一夕之间跑光了呢？它不是一夕之间跑光，它早就大家都在做撤退了，是吧？都在做撤退了。所以说很多事情我们去看本质啦，很多统计数字它有很多很多的意义啦，但是很多人不会告诉你这一层啦，他只会觉得说，哎呦，我们靠中国。如果靠中国，习近平早就把你打压了啦。他的水产品、农产品这么小的东西，他都要打压你的，这么大的商品。影响你台湾经济的东西，他会不打压你吗？想清楚了，习近平没有那么善良，好不好
？Okay, I'm sure a lot of people have like a lot of ideas and perspective on that. That's pull out your cell phone. 我们把手机拿出来 ，Let's do some Slido games, so we can see how you prioritize different values. So our first, so Dad, please scan the QR code. Mark, please do join us on this Slido.Scan the Slido QR code and we would love to ask you a few questions. The first question will be, I'm sure this is highly related to a lot of Taiwanese people. So a lot of Taiwanese artists who work in China, they openly express how much they love China and how much they see China as their motherland. So what would you think about that? 你的看法是什么？我爱你中国啊，我的祖国是中国。好，大家的回答可以是中文，可以是英文。You can put down English or Chinese, anything is fine. Let us know what you think. 大家的感觉是什么？这些艺人一直这样讲。我们可以来看一下答案吗？哦，大家还在慢慢输入，好，非常感谢。OK, money, money, money. 好自为之，这是什么意思呢？傻眼。
好自为之啦。
哦，好自为之，谢谢。
中国人的话，中国人讲。
啊，好自为之 ，God bless you.我不喜欢但尊重 I don't like it but I respect what they choose and good luck because it's no longer easy money in China anymore or maybe their agency help them do it or force them do it some people are forced any ideas 有没有什么想法想要跟大家分享 any ideas of the situation like all these celebrities they talk about how much they love Taiwan how much they love China CCP their motherland
就是我会觉得说，如果今天是假设是我，当然我是没有能力赚那样的钱啦。但我觉得说，如果今天我到大陆发展，那我是一个艺人，我在大陆赚到的钱远远大过于在台湾人民可以给我的。那么这时候我去发表这样子的言论，我认为那其实算是人之常情。只是说相反来讲，如果今天他还有一天想要回到台湾，相信像我这样子的一般民众，我就不太可能再去支持发表过这种言论的艺人。所以我为什么会说我觉得他是一个价值选择的原因是，我觉得当利益跟自己对祖国的认同，我相信里面有些人其实是明明很爱台湾，但是他却选择说出这样的言论。我相信是有这样子的人的，我并不认为说他们这么说就代表他们一定比较认同中国。但是当我必须赚中国的钱的时候，我也不认为他们做这么做绝对是错的，只是他们利益权衡之下的选择。我认为这应该要尊重他们。
我觉得台湾人有时候又善良又健忘，其实有时候没有要回来，很多时候有能力还是有机会可以回来嘛。So our participant said that she understands their choice and a lot of time because the money that you made in China is so much more than what you can do in Taiwan.
Of course, unless you are eggplant, right?
Yes. Any other perspective or ideas? 觉得完全不能接受，就是垃圾。 怎么可以这样做？树本望祖有吗？没有，这是同温层很温暖。
哇，台湾人好有包容。
对 ，You see we're so nice and tolerant。来，
其实我是不太能接受，因为其实这不是第一例啊，就是一直以来都有这样子的言论发生。但是很多人都会强调的一点是，你有想到就是当初你的家在这里，然后当初你还是就是还没有那么有名的时候，大家给你的支持，到你现在已经变得 famous， 变得很多人喜欢了，结果你选择利益这一面，这样其实会让当初支持你的那一群人或者是一般民众会觉得很傻眼，而且很难以认同。对，就像很多明星他星光大道在台湾红了很多嘛，然后去那边就是江山流水，很漂亮啊，爱祖国啊，对啊。然后，但是我觉得，我不确定这个是不是中国要打压台湾，或者是想要用任何形式，然后让台湾人自己认为说，哎，我们属于中国人，他不是都一直要台湾人讲出我是中国人？我不知道是不是他们的阴谋还是什么样的那个方式这样，所以我自己是不认同的。对。
So this participant doesn't agree with what they do because a lot of time they started in Taiwan and Taiwanese people give them a lot of support and love and now they just suddenly abandoned us. Thank you. 好，我觉得没关系。So we can see the next question and see if your values could be changed or bought.So the second question is, how much money would you need to be paid monthly in order to do propaganda work for the CCP? 好，一个月给你多少钱？你愿意帮中共做统战外宣的工作？一个月哦。So monthly salary, how much money are you willing to do? 好 ，be honest， 我们老实诚实回答，我们给一个数字哈。$10 billion a month. Wow, that's probably more than I'm willing to do.$10 billion a month. Come on, be honest. $1 million next life. Don't, unless I'll be starved to death. No, never agree. Hold on, that's too many zeros. Okay, that's a lot of money. Okay, I saw a probably a little more practical number, which is 150,000. We're all talking about NT dollars, right? 都是台币吧? NT dollars. So for Mark, NT dollars divided by 30 is US dollars. Okay. Anyone who would love to share their ideas? 有没有这个15万的？15万的在是好意思吗？或者没关系，你可以不用承认。You don't need to admit. Okay. So, but any ideas that you would love to share? 我们今天是不是有啊？来。
就我觉得它其实是一个相对性的问题，就说如果我在台湾是可以找到一个我满意的工作跟薪水，那我自然是完全不会去考虑，即便再多我都不会考虑，因为其实我的生活并不因此而受到影响。但如果今天换成是譬如说你说一个街友他在正常情况下没有办法真正在台湾获得其他的利益管道的时候，你说你给他多少钱，我相信你可能给他10,000块他就做了。所以我觉得他是一个不同情况下应该要做出不同选择的比较。对。
So everybody's situation is different. If you are happy with what you have right now, you probably wouldn't do it. But if somebody is having a hard time, then probably they would do it at a small amount of money. Right? Any ideas?
But Kylie, I totally...kind of agree, but we have just to make sure this is not a normal job offer. So it's not about that, you know? Mm-hmm. It's like, this question is very straightforward, like how much you're gonna accept to actually do propaganda for the work for the CCP. This is terrible. That includes intelligence, espionage, and so many other things. This is not a normal job. This is not like X brand from China offering you a job to be the marketing director of the company there. No, that's totally different. We have to be very careful when it comes to this.
I agree. 其实是要很小心的, because this is propaganda work.
对对对。
Probably a little more than I love China and I get, what, $10 billion a month. If I only need to say I love China, $10 billion a month, probably I'll do it. But more than that, we probably
need to. And let's don't forget, if a Taiwanese person does this kind of job, this is considered...in the Espionage Act, Intelligence Act, this is a crime. This is a felony here in Taiwan. You go to prison.
Agree. Mark, do you have any ideas? This is a pretty common question that a lot of Taiwanese people think about because it's so close to us.
Well, I mean, it's a question which was coming up for the governments too, you know? I mean, it was now a little bit funny to ask the people, hey, how much money would the Chinese government need to buy you? But that is happening with the countries. That is happening with the governments. And of course, I mean, the background of the countries is substantial. We had the situation here in Germany that the Chinese company COSTCO tried to buy big parts of the port in Hamburg, and the German government refused. And they were able to refuse because we are a rich country. But countries like Ecuador, the African countries, countries in East Europe, and they need money. And they're in the situation that they really needed the money. And there's a huge difference how they are treated in the beginning. The World Bank was coming up with a lot of conditions. And the person in the film who was sitting in the dark, he was telling me, if you're showing me, they are killing me. And he was in the government, and he was in the negotiations with the China Oil Company, Development Bank, and. And he said, with the World Bank, it was very tough to receive this 1 billion debt or loan. But with China, he said it was very easy. He said, we were so surprised. We just said we need 1 or 2 billions. And they said, hey, no problem. Just sign the contracts. But the problem, again, are the contracts and what is in the contracts. But it's easy to talk about it. I would refuse if I'm a rich country. Ecuador, for example, was one of the poorest countries of the Latin American continent. And the World Bank refused to give them money. And you have others, if you're going to the pandemia right now, the corona pandemia, Africa is very complicated. And it was lowering the economy worldwide. Same situation. If you're a rich country, it's easier. If you're a poor country in the beginning, and then the pandemia is coming. So, as I said, they are going to vulnerable countries which are open, and there are a lot of countries in the world in this situation right now.
So, I have a question. So, have you ever encountered anyone trying to approach you saying that if they pay you money, you will stop filming what you are doing?
No, we have not, because we have a public system here in Germany, a public film system for foundations and public broadcasters who are financing the film. I would never accept Chinese money, American money of a private company when they are coming up. Well, only, for example, with the condition, we want to see the film and we want to have the right to change the film. I would never do that. I mean, then you cannot do a political documentary film. Of course, I think one of the main reasons to make the film, we were talking about that. The government might be, even my own government, might be corrupted. It might be bought by the Chinese company, by the Chinese government. And so it's very substantial that the people are very aware what is going on in my own country. What are the decisions of my government? And that was one of the main reasons to make the film and to show it worldwide.
Thank you for sharing. Thank you and respect. And I actually do know a participant who probably will share with us some really unique perspective. I'm not sure if this person is willing to answer. Do I have X here? X? Right? Are you willing to share with us about your answer for question two? Is that okay?
好，你是说那个钱的问题是吗？
是的。
哦，我写了10 billion 那个，但是我是乱写的，因为他们不可能出这么多了。但是我觉得是说，既然他们现在是想，也在讲什么共同富裕这件事情，那我们也可以拿他们的钱去帮助那些需要帮助的人。就是如果他们真的愿意出很多钱的话，那我们可以用他给我们的这个钱去帮助那些可能中国需要就是人权受到迫害的一些新疆人或者什么人之类的。但我那个主要还是说的是一个笑话，因为像这一次清零政策的时候，有很多人就是穿着那个大白的那个防护衣，然后去肆意破坏人家家里的财产啊，或者是 去杀害人家的宠物。然后当然有一些真的是医护人员，那有一些也是警察，就然后有些可能就是一天200人民币、300人民币、500人民币雇来的人。那我们其实不知道他们里面那个人，因为他们被那个衣服给符号化以后，我们不知道他里面到底是好人还是坏人，但是确实有很多惨绝人寰、惨无人道的事情是他们做出来的。所以当现在清零这个政策结束以后，很多大白开始讨要工资的时候，大家其实就有一点没有那么同情他们。当然不是说每一个人都参与到了那些很恐怖的事情当中，但是因为他们穿上了这身衣服，我们也不知道他们是谁。然后当事后他们想要去讨要这个可能该由政府去给他们的工资的时候，大家已经被他们原来那个我们可能说难听一点叫白卫兵，就是跟70年代文革的红卫兵相对应。所以当他们穿上那身衣服的时候，我们也觉得说，那你当时要去做这些比较可能不好的事情，去违背你的良心去做的事情，那现在你想要去讨要你的工资讨要不到，那可能就有一点点活该。那这个可能跟当年现在的有一些香港人看当年的大陆人也是一样的，会觉得我们有一点点活该。但是我觉得越来越多的人醒过来站出来，就是总归是一件好事。对，谢谢。
谢谢你的分享。I think that's it for our discussion for this part. Thank you so much for being with us for such a long time. Thank you, Mark, and really enjoy your film. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.